InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
A unique set of financial difficulties can impact women and limit their advancement. InfoTrack reporter Gina Tedesco spoke with an expert to get this story. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. We're joined by Katie Gaddy Tassin, who's now out with her book, Rich Girl Nation, Taking Charge of Our Financial Futures. She is also a blogger and podcaster best known for Money with Katie, with advice for women seeking financial freedom. Katie, your main premise seems to be that women do not face a level playing field when it comes to acquiring money and retiring comfortably. What are some of the obstacles that women face that hinder them financially?
The reality is that women do face statistically different financial challenges than men do. Everything from the beauty and personal care consumer industries, which cost on average women $300 per month, to the wage gap and the negotiation gap that we often see, where when women negotiate for higher wages, they are less likely to be successful than their male counterparts, to what I believe to be one of the biggest things, which is the motherhood penalty. So once a woman becomes a parent, that really impacts her career and the way that she's spending her time in a way that is disproportionate when compared to her male counterpart. And then finally, there's just the boring and morbid reality of our lifespans, which is that women live about 6.5% longer on average than men, which means they do need to be investing a little bit more aggressively and a little bit differently than men do in order to make sure that their portfolio lives longer than they do.
But as you suggest, do you think the high cost of childcare is the biggest problem that working mothers face when they try to build wealth?
Well, certainly in the United States, that is the case. I think what it comes down to, and I here lean a lot on the work of a Nobel Prize winning economist named Claudia Golden, that the reality of the gender wage gap is that women do tend to bear more of that unpaid labor around their homes. So sometimes when you speak to people about the gender wage gap, they'll point to things that, well, you know, men work more paid hours than women do. And that's true. They do work about 1 hour more per day for their paid job. But women do roughly 1 hour and 10 minutes more of unpaid, often domestic labor per day. So if we look at that played out over a lifetime, we're kidding ourselves if we don't think that that's going to impact women's ability to earn money of their own.
So let's talk solutions now. On the job, first of all, give us some tips on successful salary negotiations.
Yeah, so my favorite tip for negotiation that's really, really helpful to keep in mind always, no matter what you're negotiating for, is that generally speaking, women are socialized to put other people at ease. They want to make people feel comfortable. And asking for more money is an inherently uncomfortable dynamic. So oftentimes what they find in gender-based negotiation research is that when a woman asks for more money, she is more likely to then immediately begin negotiating against herself. So oftentimes this sounds like, hey, I'm really hoping to see a raise of X percent next year. But I totally understand if that's not doable because I know that we're cutting funding and I completely get it if that's not going to work. And so after you make that ask, you want to end with that very powerful phrase, and what do you think? And then stop talking. Make sure you are not negotiating against yourself or doing your negotiating partner's job for them.
But you still have to be comfortable to do that. How does a woman become comfortable and effective in asking for a raise or even a promotion?
The comfort really comes down to two things. Before you sit down to have that conversation, how are you thinking about your role on your team? And because humans are imperfect, organizations that are composed of humans are going to be imperfect too. And my experiences in corporate America really showed me that corporations can tend to be a little bit like glorified high school lunchrooms. And so one thing that's really impactful to keep in mind before you ever sit down to ask for more money is oftentimes you'll hear this advice to keep a list of all the amazing things that you've accomplished and all your achievements, and then you privately reveal that later in this one-on-one conversation with a manager or a supervisor. That's great, but I think what works even better is if you are socializing those wins and those achievements as they are happening. So this is a little bit of an art and a science. You don't want to be braggadocious, but there are ways that you can make it known and build a network of advocates within your company, within your organization, your team, that when you are getting things done, when you are having these wins, when you are achieving these things, that you can make other people aware of that as it's happening. And that tends to build a more robust and disproportionate perception of your work ethic than kind of managing all of that privately and then talking to someone else about it one-on-one privately later.
We're visiting with Katie Gatty Tassin, veteran blogger and podcaster best known for Money with Katie. She's author of Rich Girl Nation, Taking Charge of Our Financial Futures. So let's talk about the home front here. Marriages may not always last. Talk about why a prenuptial agreement is important and how to get one.
Absolutely. Well, a prenuptial agreement is a little bit interesting because whether you think you have one or not, you do, because your state is going to provide one to you. So to me, the goal with managing your money in marriage is twofold. You want to make progress as a team. You want to have each other's backs, but you also want to make sure that you are both legally protected. So the rule of thumb that I always think about is that anything that either of you earn, buy, or borrow after the date of marriage is probably going to be treated like marital property that belongs to both of you someday if you get divorced. Now, this is true whether or not you are keeping it in joint accounts or individual accounts. It really is that date of marriage that matters, and each state handles this differently. Where prenuptial agreements can become really, really critical, and why I believe they are so crucial for women in particular, is because the data tells us that women are more likely to leave paid work than men in order to care for their family members. That is all well and good if that marriage lasts for the rest of your life and your partner is providing income for you forever. But the unfortunate situation that you really do not want to find yourself in is that you leave paid work, you care for your family, a decade or two passes, and then you find yourself in a situation where you do have to get back into the workforce because you don't have any income of your own. That is very, very challenging. And what a prenuptial agreement can do, when you and your future spouse get together, you get your legal representation, each of you working with your own attorney, is you can actually outline terms for future spousal support very creatively in that document at the time when you are both feeling the most optimistic about your relationship to say, hey, if this relationship ever ends someday and one of us had taken time off to raise our family, here's what we're going to guarantee that that person has someday if this marriage ends. That way they are never finding themselves in a position where they are without income and without employment.
So talking about spouses now, what about when husbands or boyfriends try to order the women in their lives to invest the women's earned money in a particular investment? Like, okay, dear, we're going to do this. But the women don't agree with it. What should the women say? How should they handle that?
That's a really good question. I think the first step always is making sure that if someone is coming to you and they are saying, hey, this is what I think we should do with our investments, that you know enough about investing too to either say, hey, yeah, I think that sounds great, or actually, no, I've got actually a different perspective on this. But that has to start with education. And the interesting thing that we know about in mixed sex relationships, when women and men are planning their financial future, it is more likely that the decisions are going to be abdicated to that male partner. But what's fascinating to me about this, Gina, is that when you look at the financial literacy data, the gap that men have on women, the slight edge that they have, is actually not that big. It's just a couple of percentage points. So there is a broad perception that men know more about money, but that perception is not really backed up by reality. And so this is where women can kind of get into trouble. So my perspective and my advice would be to do your own due diligence, do your own reading, your own research about investing. That way you're coming to that conversation with a distinct point of view and perspective that you are prepared to back up. And hopefully your partner, your boyfriend, your husband is somebody who respects that opinion. And if they don't, that might be a time to have a bigger conversation or take a bigger look at the relationship.
And finally, very briefly, budgeting. Give us maybe one or two must-dos to make sure your budget is effective.
The biggest thing is you want to know where your money is going. There are so many different ways that you can do this, from the automated, the apps, the websites, or you can be really, really old school with it and you can just spend, I like to say, you know, minimum Effective dose is a month. You want to get a full month's worth of spending written down to understand where your money is going. But really, if you are going for gold, 90 days is probably best. You're going to get a much fuller picture of your expenses and how you are living your life over 90 days. But you want to understand where your money is going, and then you want to sit down and really see what insights you can get from that and make sure that you are getting value from the things that you are spending money on. I have been doing this for almost a decade, and I still budget every single month and at the end of every year, look back and go, where did the most of my money go? And it almost always surprises me. So I think it's really worth doing. I think you will get amazing insights and you will make sure that your money is going where you want it to.
Okay, plenty on the ladies' to-do lists. Katie Gatti Tassin, author of Rich Girl Nation, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
Next, surviving an active shooter situation. That story as InfoTrack continues.
There's more InfoTrack coming up. Stay tuned.